Well, this program is intended for a print impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Community News. And thank you to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. This week, we bring you news from the Spencer New Leader. We'll be reading from the Friday, May 1st, 2026 edition. I'm Walter Bird with Audio Journal, and we begin with the Spencer New Leader, a publication of Stonebridge Press Newspapers, which is free by request to residents of East Brookfield, West Brookfield, North Brookfield, Brookfield, Leicester, and Spencer. Again, this is the Friday, May 1st, 2026 edition. Our first story is by correspondent Jason Blue. Overrides Selectman's Race Top Spencer Ballot. Blue writes, the town of Spencer is set to have an active municipal election May 12th with two major contested races complemented by two Prop 2.5 override questions pertaining to firefighter and school funding, respectively. The questions propose a combined $632,846 in additional taxation split between two independent items that each require a majority vote to pass. Question 1 presents an extra $368,390 to pay for four career firefighters. The hope is the new personnel will help decrease response time in town. Currently, the department is staffed by the chief and eight other full-time firefighters who operate the department 24/7, with 21 additional on-call personnel. Question 2 pertains to the Spencer East Brookfield Regional School District. The proposal seeks an additional $264,456 for the district's operating budget. While Spencer and East Brookfield share the district, Spencer manages a larger portion of the budget and overrides are specific to a town's own individual spending plan. East Brookfield has not placed its own override on their May 12th election ballot, and there is no indication from the town that an override will need to be pursued. The actual election of positions on the ballot will primarily focus on three specific seats up for grabs: the town moderator and two selectmen. Elections for treasurer, collector, assessor, Spencer East Brookfield Regional School District Committee, Southern Worcester County Regional Vocational School District Committee, sewer commissioner, water commissioner, tree warden, housing authority, board of health, park commissioner, and library trustee are all uncontested elections with enough candidates on the ballot to fill each vacancy except for one position on the Spencer East Brookfield Regional School District Committee, which has no candidate. The town moderator and selectman positions are the only truly contested battles, with selectman being a four-person race for the two open spots being vacated by Ralph Hicks and John Howard. Their terms are expiring. Gina Befford, Jennifer Jean Gaucher, Norman LaTondra Jr., and Christopher Lee Woodbury are all seeking three-year terms on the town's highest elected board. While Hicks won't run for re-election as a selectman, he will seek the moderator position with competition from Jason Michael Brewster. Both candidates are seeking to fill a vacancy for a two-year term. Spencer's annual town election takes place May 12th. Information on voting locations can be found on the town clerk page of the town website. An official copy of the ballot is also available on the website's homepage. The Cherry Valley Legion Post supports Leicester Girls Softball Field Cleanup. This story out of Leicester. Leicester Girls Softball's annual field cleanup turned into one of its biggest and most productive days in years thanks to a strong showing from the community, including a full crew from Cherry Valley American Legion Post 443. Families, players, and local high school athletes all came out to help get the field ready. That included players from the Cherry Valley American Legion softball team and Leicester high school athletes, many of whom share the field. The field is used by Leicester Girls Softball, the Cherry Valley American Legion softball team, and as the home field for Leicester High School varsity softball. It supports female athletes at every level. Leicester Girls Softball is a volunteer-run program and solely maintains the softball field. The work doesn't just happen on days like this. It takes ongoing time, effort, and a lot of hard work throughout the year to keep it in playable condition. Cherry Valley Post 443 is proud to have a Legion softball team and values its partnership with Leicester Girls Softball. The Post sponsors a team each spring, and Leicester Girls Softball co-sponsors the Legion team in the summer, which was the first American Legion softball team created in Massachusetts. Post members showed up to support the field their players use and take pride in. Volunteers got a lot done, including thatching the entire outfield, cleaning up the softball area of the complex, pressure washing and rehanging sponsor banners, and building a ramp and shelving for a new storage trailer. The turnout, especially for Post 443, showed what can happen when a community comes together to support its athletes and the field they play on. Correspondent Jason Blue brings us this next story. North Brookfield seeking internal candidates for town administrator position. North Brookfield will seek an internal candidate to serve as town administrator after an external search yielded no notable candidates to fill the vacancy. The board made the decision to repost the position April 21st. The motion yielded little discussion, but Selectman Jason Petraeus confirmed, quote, unsuccessful external recruitment attempts, end quote, for the job. The new approach will turn to seeking interested existing employees of the town as the primary pool of candidates. Selectman did not indicate whether they received any applications from the most recent posting, only that the search was unsuccessful. In his brief comments on the matter, Petraeus said he believes North Brookfield has plenty of talent that can sufficiently fill the role. He said, quote, we have people that are qualified to do the job, so I think we should try posting internally and see what happens, end quote. Fellow Selectman Jamie Gilman said by hiring someone internally, quote, they know what they're getting themselves into, end quote. North Brookfield found itself without a town administrator several months ago when the board announced the sudden resignation of Ron Aponte effective February 1st. Meeting minutes from February 10th, the date of the announcement, did not indicate any recorded motivation for Aponte's departure. This is the town's second administrator search in as many years after the resignation of Mike Solcik last April. The town previously struggled to produce a larger pool of candidates last spring when the board had initially interviewed only a single applicant in August of 2025. Selectman chose to repost the job, hoping for a better outcome, but once again only publicly interviewing one individual, Aponte, for the post. Aponte was officially hired in October. Artwork Gallery celebrates the figure. Out of Ware, Workshop 13's Artworks Gallery presents its fifth annual Celebrating the Figure exhibition. This exhibition embraces the diverse ways in which artists approach representing the human form, showcasing pieces that utilize both the clothed and unclothed figure, and uplifting the works of local and regional visual artists. Artworks Gallery is located at 69 Main Street in Ware. The fifth annual Celebrating the Figure exhibition opened with a reception April 11th and is on display through May 9th. Gallery hours are Saturday and Sundays, 1 to 4 p.m. For those who cannot attend the show in person, a virtual gallery is available for viewing at workshop13.org. That's workshop, the number 13.org. Fine artist S.K. Sullivan served as the juror for Celebrating the Figure. Liz Popolo was awarded Best in Show for her atmospheric charcoal study. Susie. Lee Hutt's sculpture piece Torso in Bronze received an honorable mention, as did Jordan Hayslip's painting Distant Gaze. Each of these artists and their works will be spotlighted on Workshop 13 social media pages as well as in their weekly newsletter. Artworks Gallery is Workshop 13's gallery on Main Street. This space features numerous art exhibitions each year and is also available to rent for individual or group shows. Workshop 13 is a dynamic center where arts, culture, and community converge, expanding access to the arts and nurturing creativity and self-expression in our rural region. For more information, visit workshop13.org or call 413-277-6072. Paxton Friends of Council on Aging plans May 26th trip to historic Deerfield Village. This is up next in this week's Spencer New Leader. The Paxton Friends of the Council on Aging will host a day trip to historic Deerfield Village Tuesday, May 26th, offering participants an opportunity to explore one of New England's best-preserved colonial-era streetscapes, followed by a traditional tavern-style lunch at Champney's Restaurant in Deerfield. The excursion will depart from the Paxton Council on Aging at 8:30 a.m. and return at approximately 3:45. Transportation will be provided by Wilson Bus Motor Coach. The centerpiece of the trip is a guided walking tour through the mile-long Old Deerfield Historic District, where visitors will step inside several preserved homes dating back to the colonial period and the 18th century. The district is maintained by Historic Deerfield, a museum and preservation organization that cares for historic houses, landscapes, and collections that interpret early life in America. Settled in 1673, Deerfield became a key frontier community during the colonial period. The town played a role in several early conflicts, including the 1704 Deerfield Raid, one of the most widely remembered episodes of King William's War in New England. Today, many of the original structures along the village's main street remain intact, providing visitors with a rare opportunity to experience an authentic historic landscape rather than a reconstructed setting. During the guided tour, participants will learn how architecture evolved over time as the region developed from a frontier settlement into a more established agricultural community. Interiors are furnished with period objects that reflect the lives of residents who once occupied the homes, offering insight into family life, craftsmanship, and changing social customs across generations. Following the walking tour, the group will travel a short distance to Champney's Restaurant and Tavern, located inside the Deerfield Inn in the center of the historic district. The inn dates to the 19th century and retains many traditional New England features, including fireplaces, paneled dining rooms, and a classic tavern-style atmosphere. Lunch selections will include a choice between herb-crusted haddock or a sliced roast beef with an herb and Dijon crust. The meal also includes rolls, a local green salad, market vegetables, mashed potatoes, seasonal fruit, crisp, and coffee or tea. Well, the $126 tour fee covers motor coach transportation, the guided village tour, and lunch. Payment is due by May 5th. Organizers note payments are non-refundable unless the ticket can be resold. Reservations are being handled by Deb Grencevich. Checks should be made payable to Paxton, FOCOA, and mailed to 88 Laurel Street, Paxton, Mass., 01612. She can also be reached at 508-245-4952 or by email at grencevichd@aol.com. That's grencevichd@aol.com. Trips such as this are a regular part of the Paxton Friends of the Council on Aging's programming, which aims to provide educational and social opportunities for older residents while highlighting regional history and cultural destinations across Massachusetts. There is an obituary in this week's Spencer New Leader. Thomas L. Fergal, 75, of Cheshire, Connecticut, passed away peacefully Monday, April 13, 2026. Born December 30, 1950, in Ware, Massachusetts, he was the son of the late Leon C. Fergal and Thelma A. Dugdale Fergal. Thomas was raised and educated in Ware and went on to build a lifelong career as a skilled tradesman, specializing in masonry and commercial construction. Thomas was well known for his strong work ethic and craftsmanship, earning the respect of colleagues and clients throughout his career. Outside of work, he had a passion for auto racing and could often be found at local racetracks, including Stafford Speedway, Thompson Speedway, and Riverside Park Speedway, where he enjoyed both racing and the camaraderie of the racing community. He will be remembered for his dedication to his craft, his love of racing, and the time he shared with family and friends. Thomas is survived by his friend James A. Cremo. In addition to his parents, he was predeceased by his brother Charles A. Fergal. Calling hours will be held at Varnum Funeral Home, 43 East Main Street, West Brookfield, Mass., 01585. There was a burial at Oak Knoll Cemetery in Palmer, Mass. You can visit his memorial page for expressions of condolences at www.varnumfuneralhome.com. Throwdown Food Truck Festival returns to Spencer Fairgrounds May 16th. The Throwdown 2026 Food Truck Festival will be held Saturday, May 16th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Spencer Fairgrounds, 49 Smithville Road. Admission is $5 at the gate. Children under 12 are free. Throwdown 2026 is Worcester County's longest-running and largest annual food truck festival and craft fair. A panel of judges and event attendees cast votes for their favorite food truck to be honored with the prestigious Best of Worcester County Food Trucks and the ever-coveted People's Choice Awards. Along with great food from dozens of food trucks, customers may browse among the over 50 artisanal craft vendors, enjoy carnival-style games, listen to music, or participate in an array of yard games, such as cornhole, giant blocks, ladder toss, and other fun activities just for the kids. Enjoy craft beer and wines at this year's event from the Stein and Vine, Central Massachusetts' favorite mobile bar service. It's a fantastic way to attend a spring afternoon with family and friends in a beautiful outdoor setting. Woo Trucks has been the most trusted name in reliable food truck booking for over a decade. Our commissary, commercial kitchen, and base of operations for food trucks, caterers, bakers, and food entrepreneurs is located at 67 Main Street, Boylston. Our fully permitted and approved facility to prepare food was established to foster a transparent, self-policing community of food trucks and food entrepreneurs practicing only the highest standards of customer service while maintaining strict adherence to health, sanitation, and food codes. WooTrucks operates food truck festivals throughout the region and supplies food trucks to corporate clients, private businesses, breweries, academic institutions, and local municipalities. Leicester Senior Citizens Club launches membership drive. The Leicester Senior Citizens Club is a group of older adults that meets at the Leicester Senior Center twice a month. The club is looking to attract new members from all of the area towns and cities. The group meets on the first and third Tuesday of each month. Meetings begin at 10 a.m. At the conclusion of each meeting, there is a scheduled form of entertainment or informational presentation. The Leicester Senior Citizens Club is linking older adults with each other and to opportunities that improve their health, well-being, and sense of community. It is the club's way of reducing the effects of isolation. We want to offer special programs beyond normal hours, and we need input and ideas from new members to help get us there. Membership is open to all individuals 60 and older. The cost to join is $10 for an annual membership. To learn more about the membership drive or to sign up, visit the Leicester Senior Center at 40 Winslow Ave, Leicester, during operating hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., or call David Wood, Program Director at the Senior Center, at 508-892-7016. Applications for Quaybach Historical Society Scholarship are welcome. The Quaybach Historical Society is proud to announce its annual scholarship program designed to support high school seniors with a passion for history and a commitment to preserving the past. This $1,000 scholarship aims to assist students planning to pursue higher education in any historical-related field. The scholarship is only offered to a student who resides in one of the Quaybach Plantation towns of Brookfield, East Brookfield, New Braintree, North Brookfield, Warren, or West Brookfield. It is offered to a current high school senior planning to enroll in a college or university for the upcoming academic year who will pursue a degree in one of the following fields: education, history, museum studies, anthropology, women's studies, American studies, or archaeology. Students wishing to study closely related fields are encouraged to apply. The application deadline is May 15th. For applications or more information, contact Jeff Robbins at jeffrobbins@charter.net or 508-579-4786. North Brookfield Senior Center announces May activities calendar. This is next in the Spencer New Leader. The North Brookfield Senior Center has released its schedule of programs for May, offering a mix of creative classes, informational sessions, games, and health services for local residents. Two free drawing classes will be held Thursday, May 7th and Thursday, May 21st at 11 a.m. Additional free art classes are scheduled for Thursday, May 14th and Thursday, May 28th also at 11 a.m., providing opportunities for participants to explore new techniques and enjoy time with fellow artists. Ed Spader will be available for Medicare assistance by appointment Thursday, May 7th and Thursday, May 28th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. The sessions are designed to help seniors review coverage options and address questions about benefits. A coffee and games gathering is planned for Monday, May 11th at 11 a.m., offering a relaxed setting for socializing and friendly competition. On Tuesday, May 12th at 11 a.m., Christy Mylott will present a lunch and learn program focused on senior options and solutions. The session includes a catered lunch and information about resources available to older adults. Music Bingo returns Monday, May 18th at 10 a.m., combining familiar tunes with a classic game format. The month's schedule concludes with a free hearing clinic Tuesday, May 19th from 10 a.m. to noon. Appointments are required. For additional details or to register for programs requiring reservations, residents are encouraged to contact the North Brookfield Senior Center. Our next feature in this week's Spencer New Leader is the Financial Focus column from Trevor Nielsen. This week's column titled, Which Retirement Plan is Right for Your Business? If you're a local business owner, a workplace retirement plan can be a powerful tool, helping you manage taxes, strengthen employee retention, and build personal financial security. Many in your situation, however, assume retirement plans are complicated and only suitable for large companies. The reality is quite different. Today's retirement plan options encompass businesses of every size, from solo entrepreneurs to companies with dozens of employees. The key is understanding which plans work best for different kinds of businesses. Self-employed individuals or businesses without employees, Three commonly used retirement plans include Simplified Employee Pension, or SEP plans, are relatively straightforward, low maintenance, lower cost, and flexible on how much you contribute each year. Owner-only 401k plans are ideal if you're willing to accept additional cost and complexity in exchange for benefits like higher contribution limits and borrowing options. Owner-only defined benefit plans work best for owners with high steady income who want to maximize their retirement contributions and guaranteed retirement income. These plans come with required annual funding and greater administrative complexity. Businesses with employees can also consider an SEP plan, although it only allows for employer contributions. Other plan options include the simple IRA, Savings Incentive Match Plan for employees. They can work well for companies with 100 or fewer employees seeking a low-maintenance option. Employer contributions are required, and it has lower contribution limits compared to other plan types. Traditional 401k plans offer maximum flexibility by allowing both employee salary deferrals and employer contributions that can be adjusted based on business performance. These plans have added costs and administrative responsibilities. Safe Harbor 401k plans are ideal if you want to maximize your own retirement contributions without complex testing requirements, and you're willing to make required employer contributions. A cash balance plan is often paired with another plan type, such as a 401k, to allow greater retirement savings. It works well when you have a smaller company with high-earning employees and consistent cash flow, and you're comfortable making required contributions. Each plan type involves different eligibility requirements, establishment deadlines, contribution limits, complexity, and costs. In determining a workplace retirement plan that's right for your business, you'll want to consider your number of employees, desired contribution levels, comfort with required employer contributions, and willingness to handle administrative responsibilities. Of course, the goals for your business and your own retirement are important criteria. Fortunately, you don't have to navigate this decision alone. A financial advisor can help you evaluate the trade-offs among different plan types and select the option that best fits your situation. They can explain how various plans work and guide you through the setup process. Starting a workplace retirement plan is an investment in your future, your business, and your employees. With professional guidance, you can find a plan that helps everyone build financial security while positioning your business for continued success. The next column this week is Lanterns Along Main Street by Charles. This week's column is titled, When the Porch Chairs Come Back. There is a certain day every year when you realize the town has put its chairs back outside. Not folding chairs for parade or cookout, I mean the ordinary ones, the ones that live on front porches, at the edge of driveways, beside garage doors, or near the front walk where the afternoon sun lingers the longest. One week they are not there, the next, they're everywhere. You do not see them arrive. They simply reappear, as if they had been waiting all winter for permission. I noticed the first one this year outside a house on a side street I drive through often. A plain wooden chair, nothing special about it, set just far enough from the front door that someone could sit comfortably and watch the street without feeling like they were blocking the entrance. 2 days later, there were three more on the same block. By the end of the week, it felt as though the whole neighborhood had quietly decided it was time again. Porch chairs change the pace of a town. When folks sit outside, they notice things. They see who walks by with a dog that is getting older. They notice which kid has suddenly outgrown last year's bicycle. They wave to someone who has lived three houses down for 20 years, but whose schedule never quite lined up with theirs until now. You cannot do that from inside. Winter encourages us to keep moving. We arrive home and go straight indoors. We close the door and settle into the evening. Spring invites us to pause again, not for long stretches, necessarily. Sometimes just 5 minutes before supper. Sometimes long enough to finish the last of a cup of coffee. Sometimes long enough to watch the sky change color, without quite meaning to. Those chairs make that possible. When I was younger, it seemed as though there was always someone sitting outside somewhere along the street. Not every house, but enough that you never felt alone walking past. There was usually someone who would nod or raise a hand or ask how things were going, even if they did not expect a long answer. That kind of presence is easy to overlook until it returns. I passed one house the other evening where two chairs had been placed side by side near the front steps. No one was sitting in them at the time, but they faced the road in a way that made it clear they would be used soon. A little farther along, someone had set a single chair near the edge of a driveway where the late sun reached just before disappearing behind the trees. Down the block, another chair rested beside a small table that looked as though it had held a glass of iced tea not long before. None of these things were remarkable on their own. Taken together, they made the street feel open again. A porch chair is a small declaration. It says someone plans to be outside for a while. It says the day has stretched enough to make room for sitting instead of hurrying. It says the neighborhood is not only a place we pass through, but a place we share. I always like the week when the chairs come back. It means the season has turned in a quiet but dependable way. And it means that before long, someone will be sitting in one of them, watching the evening settle over the street the same way people here always have. Thomas J. Bartholomew recognized on Forbes' Best in State Wealth Advisors list for 9th consecutive year. Out of Worcester, Bartholomew & Company, a provider of financial planning and wealth management services headquartered in Worcester, Massachusetts, announced that President and CEO Thomas J. Bartholomew, AIF, has been named to the Forbes Best in State Wealth Advisors list for 2026, marking the 9th consecutive year he has received the recognition. The 2026 rankings were released April 7th. The Forbes Best in State Wealth Advisors list recognizes financial advisors nationwide based on research and analysis conducted by Shook Research. According to Forbes, the evaluation process incorporates both qualitative and quantitative criteria, including industry experience, assets under management, compliance history, and professional credentials. Bartholomew said, quote, "I am honored to be included on this list for the 9th year in a row. I am thankful for that, the continued trust of my clients, and remain focused on providing thoughtful guidance tailored to their individual financial needs." Massasoit Art Guild announces Spring Small Works Show at Leicester Public Library. The Massachusetts Art Guild will present its Spring Small Works Art and Photography Show April 30th through May 27th at the Leicester Public Library, offering visitors a chance to view a wide range of compact format artwork created by Guild members from across the region. The members-only exhibition will feature original pieces limited to a maximum size of 12 by 14 inches, measured by outside frame dimensions. Artists may submit up to 2 entries each. Organizers said the smaller format encourages experimentation and accessibility while allowing a broad range of styles and media to be displayed in a shared community setting. The show will be judged as a single category rather than divided by medium. Awards will be presented for first, second, and third place along with an honorary mention. A People's Choice selection will also be recognized. Ribbon prizes will be awarded to winners. Artwork drop-off and check-in was scheduled for Thursday, April 30th in the library's ground floor community room. And later that day, the Guild hosted a public meet-and-greet reception with participating artists in the same location. Organizers encouraged all participating artists to attend that reception to connect with visitors and fellow exhibitors. The exhibition will remain on display during regular library hours through May 27th. Pickup for submitted artwork is scheduled for Thursday, May 28th from 9:30 to 11 a.m., again in the community room. Guild representatives said the annual Small Works exhibition provides an opportunity for artists to present new material while also introducing local audiences to the range of talent within the organization. The show is designed to be approachable for both established artists and newer members interested in exhibiting their work publicly. Support for the exhibition is provided in part through a grant from the Spencer Cultural Council, a local agency, supported by the Massachusetts Cultural Council, a state agency. Additional information about show rules and registration is available through the Massasoit Art Guild website. Questions may also be directed to the organization by email at massasoitartguild@gmail.com. Here's a quick look at the weather forecast ahead for the week around Spencer. Monday, May 4th, a high of 68, a low of 50 with mostly sunny skies. Tuesday the 5th, a high of 78 and a low of 56 with partly cloudy skies. And then the temperatures dip down a bit. Wednesday, May 6th, rain with a high of 63 and a low of 47. And we get into the 50s again on Thursday, May 7th, with showers, a high of 57 and a low of 41 degrees. Friday the 8th, a high of 57, a low of 41 with partly cloudy skies. And then Saturday the 9th, a high of 60, a low of 43 degrees. And PM showers, the same for Sunday the 10th, with a high of 62 and a low of 45 degrees. This community news program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule in large print or braille, call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Walter Byrd. Thank you for listening.
Welcome all to Audio Journal's Poets' Corner, the program that offers its print-impaired audience and other listeners the opportunity to listen to poetry of people from all walks of life, of those from the distant past right up to the present day. This production is brought to you in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind. I'm George Blomquist, and for the next half hour, I'll be presenting the poetry of the so-called Fireside Poets, the five famed mid to late 19th century American writers, essayists, and yes, poets, who became quite popular in both America and England during the course of the 19th century. They were Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, Oliver Wendell Holmes, John Greenleaf Whittier, James Russell Lowell, and William Cullen Bryant. They were also called the schoolroom poets, or the household poets, because of their preference for conventional forms of rhyming and metrical cadences, which made their work popular for memorization and recitation in classrooms and homes on both sides of the Atlantic. Today, the fireside poet's verse may seem more Victorian in sensibility than romantic, perhaps overly sentimental or moralizing in tone. But, as a group, they are notable for their scholarship, political sensibilities, and the resilience of their lines and themes. Now, obviously, there's no way we can adequately give all five writers their just due in merely a half an hour. Consequently, I'll be reciting the poems of Henry Wadsworth Longfellow and Oliver Wendell Holmes today, followed by the works of the remaining three, Whittier, Lowell, and Bryant, next week. So, without further ado, I'll now open our program with first a brief biological sketch of Longfellow, followed by several of his poems, beginning with The Wreck of the Hesperus. Longfellow was born on February 27, 1807, in what is now Portland, Maine, which was then still part of Massachusetts. He graduated from Bowdoin College and became a professor there, and later at Harvard College after studying in Europe. His first major poetry collections were Voices of the Night, published in 1839, and Ballads and Other Poems, published in 1841. He retired from teaching in 1854 to focus on his writing, and he lived the remainder of his life in the Revolutionary War headquarters of George Washington in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Longfellow wrote many lyrical poems known for their musicality, often presenting stories of mythology and legend. He became the most popular American poet of his day and had much success overseas. In fact, at the peak of his career, Longfellow's popularity in England rivaled that of her own Alfred Lord Tennyson, and he was the first American poet to be honored with a bust in Westminster Abbey's Poets' Corner in 1884. He died on March 24, 1882, in his beloved Cambridge, Massachusetts. And now, let's begin our program with one of Longfellow's more famous narrative poems, The Wreck of the Hesperus. It was the schooner Hesperus that sailed the wintry sea, and the skipper had taken his little daughter to bear him company. Blue were her eyes as the fairy flax, her cheeks like the dawn of day, and her bosom white as the hawthorn buds that ope in the month of May. The skipper, he stood beside the helm, his pipe was in his mouth, and he watched how the veering flaw did blow, the smoke now west, now south. Then up and spake an old sailor, had sailed the Spanish main, "I pray thee put into yonder port, for I fear a hurricane. Last night the moon had a golden ring, and to-night no moon we see." The skipper, he blew whiff from his pipe, and a scornful laugh laughed he. Colder and louder blew the wind, a gale from the northeast, and snow fell hissing on the brine, and the billows froth like yeast. Down came the storm and smote amain the vessel in its strength. She shuddered and paused like a frigid steed, then leaped her cable's length. Come hither, my little daughter, and do not tremble so, for I can weather the roughest gale that ever the wind did blow. He wrapped her warm in his seaman's coat against the stinging blast. He cut a rope from a broken spar and bound her to the mast.
Oh, father, I hear the church bells ring. Oh, say, what may it be?
'Tis a fog bell on a rock-bound coast. And he steered for the open sea.
Oh, father, I hear the sound of guns. Oh, say, what may that be?
Some ship in distress that cannot live in such an angry sea.
Oh, father, I see a gleaming light. Oh, say, what may it be?
But the father answered never a word. A frozen corpse was he. Lashed to the helm, all stiff and stark, with his face turned to the skies, the lantern gleamed through the gleaming snow on his fixed and glassy eyes. Then the maiden clasped her hands and prayed that the saved she might be, and she thought of Christ, who stilled the wave on the lake of Galilee. And fast through the midnight dark and drear, through the whistling sleet and snow, like a sheeted ghost the vessel swept towards the reef of Norman's Woe. And ever the fitful gusts between, a sound came from the land. It was the sound of the trampling surf on the rocky and hard sea sand. The breakers were right beneath her bows. She drifted a dreary wreck, and a whooping billow swept the crew like icicles from her deck. She struck where the white and fleecy waves looked soft as carded wool, but the cruel rocks, they gored her side like the horns of an angry bull. Her rattling shrouds, all sheathed in ice, with the masts went by the board. Like a vessel of glass, she stove and sank. Ho, ho, the breakers roared. At daybreak, on the bleak sea beach, a fisherman stood aghast to see the form of a maiden fair lashed close to a drifting mast. The salt sea was frozen on her breast, the salt tears in her eyes, and he saw her hair, like the brown seaweed, on the billows fall and rise. Such was the wreck of the Hesperus in the midnight and the snow. Christ save us all from a death like this on the reef of Norman's Woe. About this poem, Wikipedia notes, Longfellow combined fact and fiction to create this poem. His inspiration was the great blizzard of 1839, which ravaged the northeast coast of the United States for 12 hours, starting January 6, 1839, destroying 20 ships with a loss of 40 lives. The poem appears to combine two events. Longfellow probably drew on the specifics of the destruction of the Favorite, a ship from Wiscasset, Maine, on the reef of Norman's Woe off the coast of Gloucester, Massachusetts. All aboard were lost, one a woman, who reportedly floated to shore dead, but still tied to the mast. The name used in the poem is that of another vessel lost near Boston. The poem is so well known that the loop road leading to Norman's Woe on Route 127 is named Hesperus Ave. In December 1839, Longfellow wrote in his diary about the writing of the wreck of the Hesperus, quote, "Suddenly it came into my mind to write, which I accordingly did. Then I went to bed, but could not sleep. New thoughts were running in my mind, and I got up to add them to the ballad. It was 3 by the clock. I then went to bed and fell asleep. I feel pleased with the ballad. It hardly cost me an effort. It did not come into my mind by lines, but by stanzas." On a much lighter note, here's Longfellow's delightful poem published in 1860, featuring his three beloved daughters, titled The Children's Hour. It reads, "Between the dark and the daylight, when the night is beginning to lower, comes a pause in the day's occupations.
This is known as the children's hour. I hear in the chamber above me the patter of little feet, the sound of a door that is opened, and voices soft and sweet. From my study I see in the lamplight, descending the broad ball stair, grave Alice and laughing Allegra, and Edith with golden hair. A whisper, and then a silence. Yet I know by my merry eyes they are plotting and planning together to take me by surprise. A sudden rush from the stairway, a sudden raid from the hall. By three doors left unguarded, they enter my castle wall. They climb up onto my turret, o'er the arms and the back of my chair. If I try to escape, they surround me. They seem to be everywhere. They almost devour me with kisses, their arms about me entwine, till I think of the Bishop of Bingen in his mouse tower on the Rhine. Do you think, O blue-eyed banditti, because you have scaled the wall, such an old mustache as I am is not a match for you all? I have you fast in my fortress, and I will not let you depart, but put you down into the dungeon in the round tower of my heart. And there will I keep you forever, yes, forever and a day, till the wall shall crumble to ruin and moulder in dust away. Here's a gently poignant poem wherein Longfellow blurs the line between memory and the supernatural. It's titled Haunted Houses. It reads, "All houses wherein men have lived and died are haunted houses. Through the open doors the harmless phantoms on their errands glide, with feet that make no sounds upon the floors. We meet them at the doorway, on the stair, along the passages they come and go, impalpable impressions on the air, a sense of something moving to and fro. There are more guests at the table than the hosts invited. The illuminated hall is thronged with quiet, inoffensive ghosts, as silent as the pictures on the wall. The stranger at my fireside cannot see the forms I see, nor hear the sounds I hear. But he perceives what is, while unto me all that has been is visible and clear. We have no title deeds to house or lands. Owners and occupants of earlier dates, from graves forgotten, stretch their dusty hands and hold in mortmain still their old estates. The spirit world around this world of sense floats like an atmosphere, and everywhere wafts through these earthly mists of vapor dense a vital breath of more ethereal air. Our little lives are kept in equipoise by opposite attractions and desires, the struggle of the instinct that enjoys and the more noble instinct that aspires. These perturbations, this perpetual jar of earthly wants and aspirations high, come from the influence of an unseen star, an undiscovered planet in our sky. And as the moon from some dark gate of cloud throws o'er the sea a floating bridge of light, across whose trembling planks our fancies crowd into the realm of mystery and night. So from the world of spirits there descends a bridge of light connecting it with this, o'er whose unsteady floor that sways and bends wander our thoughts above the dark abyss." We now conclude our consideration of Longfellow with his contemplative poem about the awesome wonders of nature, titled Woods in Winter. It reads, "When winter winds are piercing chill, and through the hawthorn blows the gale, with solemn feet I tread the hill that overbrows the lonely vale. o'er the bare upland and away, through the long reach of desert woods. The embracing sunbeams chastely play and gladden these deep solitudes, where, twisted round the barren oak, the summer vine in beauty clung, and summer winds the stillness broke, the crystal icicle is hung, where from their frozen urns mute springs pour out the river's gradual tide. Shrilly the skater's iron rings, and voices fill the woodland side. Alas, how changed from the fair scene, when birds sang out their mellow lay, and winds were soft, and woods were green, and the song ceased not with the day. But still, while music is abroad, pale desert woods, within your crowd, and gathering winds in hoarse accord, amid the local reeds pipe loud. Chill airs and wintry winds, my ear has grown familiar with your song. I hear it in the opening year, I listen, and it cheers me long. Our next fireside poet is Oliver Wendell Holmes, Sr. Here's a quick thumbnail sketch of his illustrious life from the editors of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Oliver Wendell Holmes was born on August 29, 1809, in Cambridge, Massachusetts. He was an American physician, poet, and humorist, notable for his medical research and teaching, and as the author of the Breakfast Table series of essays. Holmes studied law at Harvard University before deciding on a medical career, and following studies at Harvard and in Paris, he received his degree from Harvard in 1836. He practiced medicine for 10 years, taught anatomy for 2 years at Dartmouth College in Hanover, New Hampshire, and in 1847 he became professor of anatomy and physiology at Harvard. He was later made dean of the Harvard Medical School, a post he held until 1882. Holmes achieved his greatest fame, however, as a humorist and poet. He wrote much poetry and comic verse during his early school years, and he won the national acclaim with the publication of Old Ironsides in 1830, which aroused public sentiment against the destruction of the USS Constitution, an American fighting ship from the War of 1812. Beginning in 1857, he contributed his Breakfast Table papers to the Atlantic Monthly and subsequently published The Autocrat of the Breakfast Table in 1858, The Professor of the Breakfast Table in 1860, The Poet of the Breakfast Table in 1872, and Over the Teacups in 1891, written in conversational style and displaying Holmes' learning and wit. Holmes died on October 7, 1894, in his hometown of Cambridge, Massachusetts. Now, as you may have surmised, I will indeed be reciting Holmes's most famous poem, Old Ironsides. But first, here's some background on the poem. Old Ironsides was composed by Holmes as a tribute to the USS Constitution, an 18th-century American battleship which was on the verge of being decommissioned. The ship was given its nickname, Old Ironsides, during the War of 1812 after battling the HMS Guerrière, whose cannonballs purportedly bounced off the USS Constitution's sturdy wooden sides as if they were made of iron. Old Ironsides became one of Holmes's most famous known pieces after it was published in the Boston Daily Advertiser in September of 1830. Due to the poem's popularity, the ship was saved from decommissioning. It is currently the world's oldest commissioned ship still afloat. Here, then, is Old Ironsides by Oliver Wendell Holmes. Aye, tear her tattered ensign down, long has it waved on high, and many an eye has danced to see that banner in the sky. Beneath it rung the battle shout, and burst the cannon's roar. The meteor of the ocean air shall sweep the clouds no more. Her deck, once red with heroes' blood, where knelt the vanquished foe, when winds were hurrying o'er the flood and waves were white below, no more shall feel the victor's tread or know the conquered knee. The harpies of the shore shall pluck the eagle of the sea. Oh, better that her shattered hulk should sink beneath the wave. Her thunders shook the mighty deep, and there should be her grave. Nailed to the mast her holy flag, set every threadbare sail, and give her to the god of storms, the lightning and the gale. Next is a somewhat melancholy piece titled The Last Leaf. About this poem, the website poemofquotes.com notes, "The Last Leaf speaks about the last person alive of out of all his friends and family. It's narrated by a young man who sees an elderly fellow who looks sad, as if he no longer wants to live, prompting the young man's musings. It reads as follows. I saw him once before as he passed by the door, and again the pavement stones resound as he totters o'er the ground with his cane. They say that in his prime, ere the pruning knife of time cut him down, not a better man was found by the crier on his round through the town. But now he walks the streets and looks at all he meets, sad and wan, and he shakes his feeble head, that it seems as if he said, they are gone. The mossy marbles rest on the lips that he has pressed in their bloom, and the names he loved to hear have been carved for many a year on the tomb. My grandmama has said, poor lady, she is dead long ago, that he had a Roman nose, and his cheek was like a rose in the snow. But now his nose is thin, and it rests upon his chin like a staff, and a crook in his back, and a melancholy crack is his laugh. I know it is a sin for me to sit and grin at him here, but the old three-cornered hat, and the breeches, and all that are so queer. And if I should live to be the last leaf upon the tree in the spring, let them smile as I do now at the old forsaken bough where I cling." Our next poem is The Chambered Nautilus. About this poem, poemanalysis.com writes, "This poem was written in 1858 as the poet's reflection on the natural world and the idea of struggle, growth, and evolution, using the chambered nautilus, a type of sea creature, as a metaphor highlighting the strength one can gain through struggling and the message one can interpret from the nautilus's life. It reads as follows. This is the ship of pearl which, poets feign, sails the unshadowed main, the venturous bark that flings on the sweet summer wind its purpled wings, in gulfs enchanted, where the siren sings, and coral reefs lie there, where the cold sea maids rise to sun their streaming hair. Its webs of living gauze no more unfurl, wrecked is the ship of pearl, and every chambered cell, where its dim dreaming life was wont to dwell, as the frail tenant shaped his growing shell, before thee lies revealed, its irised ceiling rent, its sunless crypt unsealed. Year after year beheld the silent toil that spread his lustrous coil. Still, as the spiral grew, he left the past year's dwelling for the new, stole with soft step its shining archway through, built up its idle door, stretched in his last found home,
and knew the old no more. Thanks for the heavenly message brought by thee, child of the wandering sea, cast from her lap, forlorn. From thy dead lips a clearer note is born than ever Triton blew from his wreathed horn. While on mine ear it rings, through the deep caves of thought, I hear a voice that sings, build thee stately mansions, O my soul, as the swift seasons roll. Leave thy low-vaulted past. Let each new temple, nobler than the last, shut thee from heaven with a dome more vast, till thought at length art free, leaving thine outgrown shell by life's unresting sea. And now we'll conclude our program today with Holmes's stirring poem, A Hymn of Peace, which was celebrating the end of the American Civil War. It reads, Angel of peace, thou hast wandered too long. Spread thy white wings to the sunshine of love. Come, while our voices are blended in song, fly to our ark like the storm-beaten dove. Fly to our ark on the wings of the dove. Speed o'er the far-sounding billows of song, crowned with thine olive-leaf garland of love. Angel of peace, thou hast waited too long. Joyous we meet on this altar of thine, mingling the gifts we have gathered for thee. Sweet with the odors of myrtle and pine, breeze of the prairie and breath of the sea, meadow and mountain and forest and sea. Sweet is the fragrance of myrtle and pine, sweeter the incense we offer to thee. Brothers once more round this altar of thine. Angels of Bethlehem, answer the strain. Hark, a new birth song is filling the sky. Loud as the storm wind that tumbles the main, bid the full breath of the organ reply. Let the sound tempest of voices reply. Roll its long surge like the earth-shaking main. Swell the vast song till it mounts to the sky. Angels of Bethlehem, echo the strain. You've been listening to Poets' Corner, a production of Audio Journal, proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you have any comments or suggestions for Poets Corner, please let us know by calling us at 508-797-1117 or by emailing us at info@audiojournal.org or by mailing us at Audio Journal, 799 West Boylston Street, Worcester, Massachusetts, 01606. This program has been archived on our website, audiojournal.org, along with other Audio Journal programs. I'm George Bloomquist, thanking you for listening. And now, stay tuned for other local programming brought to you by Audio Journal. Would you like to hear news from Barry and Spencer that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune in to Audio Journal every Monday at 6 p.m.
What's your vision?
My vision is 20/200.
Light perception in the right eye, zero vision in the left eye.
No. What's your vision?
My goal is to become a journalist.
To be able to work.
Financial independence.
At the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind, we believe that all people who are blind or visually impaired should have the opportunity to work and thrive. To learn how we can help you meet your employment or workforce goals, call 800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/mcb.
Would you like to hear news from Auburn, Grafton, Millbury, and Sutton that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune in to Audio Journal every Monday at 5 p.m.